Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. While the condition known as dry eye may sound like a minor problem, it can cause tremendous discomfort and even pain. On today's program, our special guest is Doctor of Optometry, Dr. Jeffrey Anschel. Dr. Anschel is the author of the new book, What You Must Know About Dry Eye, How to Prevent, Stop, or Reverse Dry Eye Disease. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest news and research affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here are some interesting healthcare statistics. It's estimated that as much as 80% of all healthcare dollars are spent on treatment of chronic conditions that are preventable. And according to Medicare, healthcare expenditures in the United States were nearly $2.6 trillion in 2010, an average of $8,402 per person. 90% of the U.S. senior population consumes prescription drugs, which costs doubling in the last 30 years. Complications associated with prescription drugs is the fourth leading cause of death, with 45 to 50 million adverse events annually. And statistics show that 70% of all Americans consume prescription medications, with Americans spending more on pharmaceuticals than all the rest of the world combined. Well, according to a registered dietitian, nuts are healthful, but keep portions to a handful. Nuts are a healthy snack, but registered dietitian Erwin Gussler said that it is important to limit portions to one handful. Gussler says that Brazil nuts containing selenium, which aids thyroid function and reproduction, almonds are high in fiber, cashews may promote eye health, and walnuts are a good source of omega-3 fatty acids.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Well, while the condition known as dry eye may sound like a minor problem, it can cause tremendous discomfort and even pain. Now, worse, this disorder can lead to eye fatigue, blurred vision, and difficulty driving, especially at night. Well, our special guest today is Doctor of Optometry, Dr. Jeffrey Anschel. Dr. Anschel received his Bachelor of Science degree in Visual Science and his Doctorate of Optometry from the Illinois College of Optometry. After his service in the U.S. Navy, Dr. Anschel went into private practice, offering his patients' nutrition and alternative therapies as part of their vision care. Dr. Anschel lectures internationally and has written 6 books, and today we're going to be talking about his latest book, What You Must Know About Dry Eye, How to Prevent, Stop, or Reverse Dry Eye Disease. Well, Dr. Anschel, thank you for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, let's get to some of the basics about your book on dry eye. And first of all, what exactly is dry eye condition? And is it really a problem on par with other disorders like, you know, there's glaucoma or say you've written a book on, which we've interviewed you in the past on macular degeneration. How does it compare to those type of conditions?
Well, dry eye doesn't typically come across as a sight-threatening disease. As a matter of fact, when it first started coming up, they call it dry eye syndrome, which was just a series of symptoms that people would get when their eyes would get dry. And with the aging of the population, it's coming up more and more in doctors' offices of people complaining about their eyes feeling dry. And actually, now that we have so many people using computers and digital images, it's happening in younger people as well. So in the eye care profession, we're seeing much more of the condition popping up. And again, it's not something that people need to be worried about as far as the blindness goes, per se, even though if it is left unchecked, it can create some issues with the eye itself. And we'll talk about those. But it's something that people will come in and say, my eyes feel dry. And then we need to start figuring out what it is.
What are some of the more common causes of dry eye disease? And also, if you could tell us, what are maybe some of the less common causes?
Well, when I first started lecturing on this topic, I would list the different things that could cause dry eyes, starting with the environment, for example. If you live in Phoenix or Las Vegas or even up in Denver in the high altitudes, the air is very dry. So your environment can be very dry, and that will, dry your eyes out. But also your internal environment. Again, people using computers or doing a lot of reading, or in the winters when the heat's on, that will tend to dry eyes out. There's also things like the computer use that I mentioned. Also, medications that people are taking. So, if someone, especially with older people, tend to be taking a lot of medications, some of these things can dry your eyes out. People that have allergies will take something for their allergies. And what the medication is designed to do is to dry out the tissue that covers the inside of their nasal passages, which is the same tissue covering the front of their eyes. So there's problems there. Also, some autoimmune diseases will create a dry eye type of problem. So when I'm lecturing right now, I basically say, look, anything can cause dry eyes, or everything can cause dry eyes.
Okay.
And the interesting part is that sometimes we'll have people walking into the office saying, oh, my eyes feel dry, or my eyes are too wet. And then we have to distinguish, what's going on there. Well, most of the time, it's actually dry eyes. And as a matter of fact, when I examined my own brother one time, he had a tear coming down the right side of the cheek. I go, what's that? He goes, oh, it tears every once in a while. Well, I tested him out, and sure enough, he had dry eyes. And so this is something we need to talk about. It's like, well, wait a minute, doc, my eyes are wet. How can I have dry eyes if my eyes are too wet? So that's something I actually, we have to look at. And basically, the short version is that the brain is monitoring the tearing level. And when it senses that the eye is dry, it stimulates the tear gland to produce more tears. Well, the tear gland that it produces is the one that flushes your eye when you're cutting onions or crying or, that kind of tearing. So it's kind of a mist, it's like, okay, let's open up the floodgates and boom, you get this flooding of tears. And next thing you know, it's spilling over onto your cheeks. So what we call that is reflex tearing. So dry eye can actually be eyes that are too dry or too wet.
All right. Well, as an optometrist, what kinds of tests do you think are the best for determining whether or not you have dry eyes?
Well, there's two basic forms of dry eye. One is the fact that you're not producing enough tears. That we call productive dry eye. And the other type is that you have enough tears, but they're evaporating too quickly. And we call that type evaporative dry eye. So we have to determine which form it is, because they typically have a couple of different causes. Now, if you're not producing enough tears, that's probably something with the tear glands that are, where the tears are produced. And there's some tear glands in the covering of the front of the eye itself. And there's some just up underneath the bone to the upper corners of your eye, just behind your orbit, the bony orbit, just behind the eyebrow, basically. So those are the glands that produce tears. So we have to look and see, is this person not producing enough tears? Or the other type is evaporative. And what we see here is that there's three layers to the tears. The back layer, which is closest to the eye, is a mucus layer. And that kind of holds the tear layer to the eyeball. The center portion is what we call aqueous or watery layer. And that's where all the nutrients and proteins and things that feed the eye and nutritionally are in that watery layer. And then there's the front layer, which is a lipid or fatty layer. Now, that fatty layer is produced by glands inside your eyelids. So every time you blink, you squeeze out a little bit of oil out of those eyelids, and that creates the front layer of your tears. Now, if those glands are not producing oils adequately, or if there's, you know, if there's degeneration of the glands, or if there's something wrong in the production of those oils, then they'll stop flowing as easily. They're, think of those as the consistency of like an olive oil, something like that. Okay. Uh-huh. But I've seen patients sometimes where have, you know, I kind of call it toothpaste coming out of their eyelids. If the oil has been congealed and it's just white and just, you know, not flowing properly. So there's a whole spectrum of, you know, consistency of those oils in the eyelids. So that could be the problem. You have to, you know, see how we can get those glands to produce better oils. So it'll keep the tears from evaporating too quickly.
Now, you speak in your book about something called tear testing. What is that?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways of doing this. You know, we have to test the tears on one level or another. We test to see, like that lipid layer I was talking about. We have a test where we could put a dye into the eye and see, and it covers the tears. And as soon as they start to evaporate, we get these black spots showing up on this green background. So we can see how fast the tears are evaporating. But we also have other tests where we can put a tiny little thread inside the bottom eyelid off to the side. Doesn't irritate the eye very much, but this thread has a dye in it. And as the tears soak up into the dye, we see how fast it goes up this thread. Well, and then we, after about 15 seconds, we take that out and measure how fast the tears are going. So that's one way to test the evaporation of the tears, and in this case, the production of the tears. And there's different stains and different techniques that the doctor can use to test the tears, whether they're, you know, it's productive tears or evaporative tears. But now we're also looking at different things like testing different proteins in the tears and different nutrients in the tears. And these nutrients actually can determine if the tear gland is producing tears adequately. So there's new tests coming up all the time and new treatments coming up all the time where they can, you know, some are in the doctor's office and some are things you can do at home. In the doctor's office, we have these units that can actually heat and massage the eyes at the same time. But I typically start with something simple and easy for people and said, all right, let's do a hot compress, basically a hot water washcloth over the eyes for a while, but 5 minutes, and then massage the eyes afterwards. So I try to give people simple things that they can do.
Okay. So let's say someone actually gets diagnosed with dry eye. What next? What are some of the better existing conventional medical treatments that many people are using?
Well, typically eye drops. You know, that's the first thing that people think about as well. Let me use some eye drops. And then they go to the store and they see about, you know, 5,000 different kinds of eye drops out there on the shelf. And they're totally overwhelmed. And they typically just buy what's on sale. So, you know, I always suggest to the doctors to make the specific recommendations. Now, the first thing you want to make sure is that people are not using drops that just get the red out.
Okay.
If their eyes are red, if their eyes are red, it could be, you know, I get these phone calls. Well, my eyes are red. What should I do? Well, I can't tell over the phone. There's like 100 different things it could be.
Right.
So that's very challenging. And, you know, so just getting, you know, if your eyes are red, there's a reason. So we don't know the reason. It could be a bacteria. It could be a fungus. It could be a virus. It could be all kinds of things. It could be a scratched eyeball. It could just be anything. So we really don't know where to go with that. We have to see the eye to know what to do. But, you know, there are a lot of different tests that, you know, that we can do. But the number one thing most people will first of all do is just go to the drugstore, get some eye drops, and try those. Well, simply, and here's the challenge with that, you know, something that gets the red out typically.
Yeah.
It artificially shrinks the blood vessels in the front of the eye. But what happens is by the next morning, those blood vessels are twice as big. So you use another drop that artificially shrinks them for a while. Then the next morning, they're twice as big. And there's this cycle that happens of trying to keep up with it. And I constantly hear people going, look, I use these drops all the time and my eyes are still red. Yeah, it's because you're using the drops all the time. So it's good for the company, bottom line, but it doesn't do your eyes any good. So, you know, basically, again, if your eyes are red, there's a reason. Now, if they want to try something that's just an artificial tear that has no get the red out medication in it, that's worth trying. And again, there's dozens of those, and they have different formulations. And the problem with that is that typically it's just palliative treatment that just lasts maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. Now, for some people, they say, oh, I put it on in the morning and I'm good all day. Well, that's great. Then just do that. But for most people, you know, it's only last, you know, they find that they have to use eye drops 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day. And it kind of starts interfering with the lifestyle, especially if you're using a computer and you're not blinking as much.
Let me ask you, now, people that wear contact lenses, you know, there's different drops they put on the lens, and then they have drop if you feel like your eyes are getting dry. What about the whole with contact lenses?
Well, with contacts, and we're fitting all 90% soft contacts these days.
Yeah.
Anytime you put anything on the eye like that, you have your tear film that I described, right? The three layers.
Right.
Well, what the contact lens does is it splits that layer into two smaller layers. It kind of sits between them. So there's a kind of thin tear layer behind the contact lens and a thin tear layer in the front. Now, if you go in with a dry eye to begin with, in other words, you have dry eyes and thinking about getting contacts, the doctor absolutely needs to test for dry eyes before he fits you with contacts. Because if you have dry to begin with, it's going to make it worse.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, even and in the old days, we were getting lenses with higher water content in them.
Yes.
And we were thinking, okay, well, you got a lens, got a lot of water, put it on the eye, it's going to be fine, right? Nope. The opposite happens.
Really?
Dry eye sucks the water out of the lens and makes for a tighter, more uncomfortable contact lens. So a little counterintuitive there. I kind of liken it to taking a wet sponge and throwing it on the desert and expecting the desert to get wet from it. It doesn't quite happen that way. Yeah. You know, again, we need to use the right contact lens. The advantage these days is we're using lenses, number one, that are better, is better materials are coming out, and the frequency of throwing them away. Now, in the old days, you know, the old hard lenses used to last for years. And then when soft lenses came out, well, they maybe lasted a year. And then we were looking at replacing them quarterly, and then replacing them monthly, and then every 2 weeks. And now we're down to just putting them on in the morning and throwing them away at night.
Right.
And so, you know, and that's honestly the best mode to use, because while it is a little bit more expensive, it's the healthiest for your eyes. You're putting a brand new lens on every day.
Right.
And by the time that lens, you know, starts to go downhill, it's typically in the trash anyway.
What are some of the basic steps one could take, let's say, from a healthy lifestyle standpoint, and especially diet and a nutritional approach for dry eyes?
Well, when I talk to docs about dry eyes, we, you know, most docs have heard about the omega-3s and fish oil treatment. And finally, in 2011, they finally had a pilot study that showed that taking omega-3 fish oil will help with a dry eye condition. And since then, a lot more studies have come out showing it happens. And as, you know, as I mentioned to you before in our other discussion, there can be some issues, especially if people are vegetarian, getting
right.
the proper essential fatty acids and getting flaxseed oil and
right.
having it convert properly. You know, most doctors are going to just say, well, take some fish oil. But I find that it's actually just part of the solution. Now, if someone just takes fish oil or eats fish twice a week, whichever, they can, you know, will probably help their dry eyes, but it may take several months to happen. Now, what we're also finding is that people who undergo surgery, and again, this is happening more with older adults, or people that have LASIK or cataract surgery, you know, you're doing some cutting into the eye and you're breaking that tear film. And one of the effects of that is having dry eyes. And they're finding out over half of the people that go in for cataract surgery have dry eyes because they're typically in their 70s or later. But you know, people have LASIK for a year afterwards may have dry eyes until their, you know, nerves regrow and balance things out. I'm not into the category of using a lot of fish oil for just dry eyes. I recommend a product that has a balance of just a little bit of fish oil, but all, you know, some cod liver oil, and it has some GLA, which is gamma linolenic acid, which you can
right.
get from black currant seed oil or evening primrose oil.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, now somebody, you know, again, was vegetarian or vegan, that's
right.
the way to go. Get the GLA and just use that.
Yeah.
Right. If they're okay with the fish oil, you know, have some of that, but again, make sure what you're taking has some GLA in it. And the combination of the two works really well, because GLA comes from omega-6 essential fatty acids, which have been shown in excess to be pro-inflammatory. And
right.
People kind of get freaked out about that. But if you have the omega-3s to help balance that out, it'll block the progression of the GLA to the pro-inflammatory, and it'll become an anti-inflammatory that is what we call mucus-specific anti-inflammatory. And again, remember that there's a mucus membrane in the back of the tear film. So that's what you need to enhance, is not just the top layer with the omega-3 fish oils, but the bottom layer for the mucus layer to get that enhanced. And again, that's where the GLA comes in.
Yeah. And there also is the algal supplements too, as DHA
right.
is omega-3.
Right. Right. If they want to use that as their omega-3, that's an excellent way to go. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point in your own life, how is your vision doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there. You know, I've seen, more days behind than ahead, but I was actually, you know, typically people get their reading glasses in their early 40s. You know, I have the focusing ability decreases. So, I saw what was coming. So I said, you know, I better kind of take care of myself here and be proactive. So I didn't get my first reading glasses till I was 50.
Really?
So I think I did pretty well. Yep. Put it off. And even more surprising, I'm a tiny bit farsighted as well, where my distance vision was fine, but I had to focus a little bit to see far away. And if you kind of look at the tables and charts, somebody who's a little bit farsighted will have their reading problems earlier than somebody who's nearsighted. So given that I made it to 50, I must have done pretty well. But I got to a point where I was traveling a lot and needing to read more, and I couldn't do my exercises as much as I needed to, but eventually got into the reading glasses. And given that I'm turning 70 this year, just wearing glasses is fine, because when I do put them on, everything is crystal clear. And that, to me, is the bottom line. You know, I know, you know, glasses are frustrating for people at some point, but there's a lot of other options out there now. So the bottom line for me is, what you're doing, if you're seeing clearly, your eyes are in good health. So that's the important part.
Well, now your book is What You Must Know About Dry Eye, How to Prevent, Stop, or Reverse Dry Eye Disease. We just have a couple of minutes left. Tell me a little bit about, kind of walk us through the book and all the different types of information you'll have in this book.
Well, we start out with what I call eyeball basics. You know, we teach people about the eyeball itself and how it works and the different parts of the eye. And then we start concentrating on the front of the eye, where the cornea is. And, you know, actually people think that the cornea is the first surface that light hits when it goes into the eye. Well, it's the first physical surface. Well, it's not actually, because the first physical surface is the tear film. So very commonly we'll get people to say, look, my vision, you know, I have to blink a lot to see clear. And the first thing that pops up for me is, well, your tear film is probably uneven and probably dissipating too quickly. And that's something that's come up recently as well, because, you know, we tend to think about, well, what the prescription is and, you know, checking their prescription. But, well, maybe it's the tears that are coming and going a little bit that are causing their vision to fluctuate. So I go, and again, computer use these days is a very common cause of dry eyes. We're looking at computers and digital images more. We're staring more. We blink less and different positions. And we're looking at these things so much, we're getting eye strain. And part of that is poor tearing. And then we talk about the tests for dry eyes. Not so people can do them, but so that they are familiar with what the doctor's going to do in the office, so they can have a better sense of it. And then as far as the treatments and the for the problem, I go through the medical treatments and certainly emphasize the nutritional approach, and then talk about foods and supplements that will help dry eyes. So I try to keep, you know, it's not a thick book. It's almost like a handbook that people can use to just target these things that may be coming up for them. The number one demographic for dry eyes is women over 40, and there are hormone receptors on the tear glands. So this is something that everybody over, you know, in their 40s or later needs to start paying attention to. Personally, I don't have dry eyes, but when I'm sitting on an airplane flying cross country and reading a lot, boy, they dry out.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But that's that environment that people are in that, you know, puts your eyes at risk. So I always have some lubricating drops. Homeopathic drops are very good for dry eyes. you can use them when you have contacts on, so they're good for that. So, there's a lot of options out there for people, and there's more and more things coming out all the time.
I see in your book you also have some questionnaires. Here's an ocular surface disease index questionnaire.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you go to the doctor's office. If you check off dry or wet eyes, they're going to say, okay, let's find out more details about it. And they'll give you these questionnaires. And I'm working with a company right now that's actually developing what we call a point of care diagnostic test that will actually take a little tear sample from somebody and put it into a little cassette. And this goes into a little miniature computer and it reads the tears and it will actually tell what the nutritional balance is in the tears. It'll read a particular protein in the tears that if it's low, it'll distinguish between aqueous deficient tears and evaporative tearing. So it can help the doctor. And also for if allergies, you know, people can come in and they start giving you their symptoms. Well, we have to determine, is this an allergy or is this dry eyes? And this little unit can help distinguish that. So I'm working with a company that's got something that's going to really help the doctors out quite a bit and distinguishing what the differences are and how to get these things done and then be able to treat it right away without having to come back several times.
Well, the book again, What You Must Know About Dry Eye, How to Prevent, Stop, and Reverse a Dry Eye Disease by Dr. Jeffrey Anshel. And I'll tell you in the back, there's a lot of great scientific references. So you can see a lot of research went into this book. It's very comprehensive. And Dr. Anshel, where can people get a hold of this book?
Well, the easiest way is just go to Amazon, type in my name, full name, and you can check it out there. And it's also available in bookstores.
Okay, and that's Jeffrey Anshel, A-N-S-H-E-L. So if you're going to type that in. Well, thank you very much for being with us and keep up the good work and telling people about having healthier eyes and, of course, avoiding dry eye.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
That's it for this week's program. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.